Good morning. I am a plant physiologist. I snuck into the group. I've been in Kansas for 2.5 years now, and the biggest problem we have is our soils. The limitations, the frustrations of managing them, and I'd like to talk to you about that today. Do I use this to change? How do I? The down button? There we go. Okay. This is where I'm at. The around the yellow circle, or the red circle there. I'm in southeast Kansas, actually closer to OSU than KSU, right across the border from Missouri. And if you know the United States, the Ozarks are kind of right there. We're not quite in the Ozarks, but just outside of it. The area that I'm working in is the Midlaeotia watershed. It's a critical watershed that drains all of agricultural activity, agricultural and mining activity of southeast Kansas into Oklahoma, in particularly the Grand Lakes watershed of Oklahoma. It's the transfer point, and it is producing transboundary issues, environmental issues between the states. So we're very concerned about it. Primary activities in the area are agriculture production of cows on pasture, row crops, and small grains. The silt loam topsoil is productive, but it's prone to erosion. As they say, you get plenty of rain down there. Yes, during the month of May, we get about 40 inches. So very high rainfall amounts, intense in a short period of time. The problem that we have is the Midlaeotia watershed does not meet state water quality standards, and it has compromised the habitat and ecosystem health. The highest priority of impairments are nutrients, sediments, and bacteria. Again, most of that from agricultural activities. The objective, the overarching objective of my research is to develop and implement resilient, sustainable agronomic practices that improve the water quality in the Midlaeotia and the Grand Lakes watershed. More specifically, where we're at, this is Oklahoma, this is Kansas, this is Missouri. This is the Neosia watershed, this is the Verdigris, and this is the Spring River, that's the Miritocene. All of this drains into the Grand Lakes watershed. Grand Lakes watershed is a major recreational area that has experienced a lot of algal blooms and so on again, a lot of because of the sediments and nutrients coming off of Kansas agriculture into the adjoining state. The Middle Neosia watershed is this area right here, with the main Neosia River coming through there. We've got several monitoring stations, one near Parsons, another one is just south in Oklahoma at Commerce. And some previous work that Buckley showed is the change in soil. This is for a clay pan soil. This is in the clay pan area. We have a good topsoil down to about 10 to 12 inches, and then it very quickly transitions into a very heavy clay pan. And one of the things I want to look at is how that clay pan changes the erosion characteristics of it. I'm doing a lot of work on farm. I take on farm measurements. This is from a transect in a particular field. And this is what you would expect the soil profile to be. So we've got the triangle there, clay, sand, silt. We start out at the upper regions as a silt loam, moving into a silty clay loam, getting denser as we go lower, and at the very bottom, 12 to 18 inches, we're in the heavy clay. Now, unfortunately, other fields I have measured this kind of profile where we've got heavier soils all the way at 3 to 6 inches. And those soils, like the other fellow was saying that just before me, this directly impacts productivity. The more clay there is, the less activity we have, the less productivity we have. So yield of our three primary crops, soybean, corn, and wheat, are all directly decreased as the amount of clay increases. This is an elevation map that I developed from LIDAR data. You can see this is a fairly typical field kind of thing. We've got a high point, high ridge kind of in the middle of the field here, leveling, laying off to decreasing elevations, not huge changes. Everybody says Kansas is flat. No. We have some elevation, maybe not as much as other areas, but we do have topographic changes that will impact the erosion and the water flow off of the fields. And then this is developed with TauDEM in ArcGIS, looking at the topographic wetness index. These areas tend to stay wet, and then these are the drainage points of water off of the field. Here is a corn yield map for that field, and you can see this area of high is an area that has very low production potential. This area here tends to stay flooded and has low production potential. Does somebody have a question? We also looked at electrical conductivity of this field, and it matches the production potential, where you've got your, if you will, bad area of the field, and that matches this with this here. We also have a good area of the field. Again, this is the high point of the field. What we wanted to do is look a little bit further at these two areas of the field and see what was going on. And so we selected a transect at the high point and at the low point, if you will. It's not the lowest point of the field, but the productive area. And working with Stacy Kaleza in civil engineering, that's her grad student, they did a resistivity test where they put probes into the ground and looked at the electrical resistivity of this. This is the upper part of the field, the high area, you can see, and these are now in meters, so these are going much deeper than I go with EC measurements or so on. So this very, very top part, this green layer here, is the good soil, if you will. This blue layer is the dense clay pan, and underneath that we actually get an area that does drain somewhat. But we have a very limited topsoil for productivity. This is the a portion of the field that's at lower elevation. It has a higher drainage, like I say, below about 1.3 meters, and you see a bit of the limitation in the clay layer, but not nearly as extreme as at the upper level. So now I'd like to transition to some of our modeling and looking at the water quality in the area. And again, like I say, most of the activity in the area is crop production. So we've got a lot of, as you can see here, drainage coming off to carrying sediment and nutrients off of the field. We also have a lot of cow production. We have, I think, twice as many cows in Kansas as people. And we also have turkey litter. Now, turkey litter or poultry litter comes primarily from production in other states, Missouri and Arkansas. We ship it in as the cheap nutrient, but it does create problems. So this is the Middle Neosho watershed again. This is the Neosho River, primary river coming through there. We've got the Parsons Research Station and a Columbus Research Station, as well as sampling. I've got several producers that I'm working with, and then also KDHE measures sampling, water sampling throughout the area. The KDHE and other groups in Kansas have developed critical areas for targeting BMPs, and those critical areas include livestock production areas, cropland, and then poultry litter areas. And what we decided to do is focus on Cherry Creek, which is this main area here. We've got upper and lower Cherry Creek, and Vladimir Alacon at Universidad Diego Portales in Santiago, Chile, is working with HSPF to develop a water quality model to look at sediment and nutrient transport in this area. So this is the HSPF watershed subdivision of the Cherry Creek. It divides it into 28 sub-basins or sub-watersheds, each of which is then modeled down to the outlet. So we have the main areas, the 28 sub-watersheds in the outlet. Then we wanted to look at how, if we changed practices within these sub-watersheds, how it would impact nutrient and sediment. So we chose sub-basin 1, 4, and 16, and changed practices within those, and then looked at the outlet, what the nutrients and sediments were that coming out of the outlet based on the changes that we made. And we looked at three different land use scenarios. One was a base land use scenario of land use as of 2001, the land use map. The second one was agricultural, if we increased crop and pasture land in subbasins 1, 4, and 16, with a proportional decrease in forest, grasslands, and wetlands. And the third was a BMP, if we did substituted filter strips for 50% of crop and pasture in those subbasins. That's a huge amount of conversion to a filter strip, but for demonstration purposes. So this is the base scenario. This is again from 2001. We see most of the land use is agricultural for crop and pasture, very little urban, some forest. There's also a lot of mining in the area, but most of that has been abandoned now. Again, for subbasin 4, most of it's crop and pasture, some urban. There's no urban in number 16. The agricultural scenario increased crop and pasture land and decreased forest and area. And the BMP decreased crop and pasture and increased the grass waterways in each of the, in only those three subbasins. So then how that changed, the nitrate concentration at the stream outlet, this, the blue is the base layer. In under the agricultural scenario, it increased nitrate output at the stream, but only during the rainy season, the production season, from about February to June. That's our rainy season. Alternatively, the BMP implementing grasslands reduced the nutrient output, and that stayed reduced throughout the whole water year. What we want to look at now is we're doing additional work with this following up. We're also looking at grazing the cover crops. The current crop production system is a very tight 3 crops in 2 years. Love to be able to incorporate cover crops in it. One of the myths of production is the farmers say they always have something on the land, but there is time that the land is bare. So we're trying to implement cover crops into these systems. The challenge is that the cropping system is so tight, it's difficult to know how to get cover crops implemented into that system. Another factor is if we can graze cover crops, that would allow the farmers to recuperate some of the expenses of implementing cover crops. So we're doing a grazing study with cows on wheat with and without tillage radish implemented, and see how that changes the soil characteristics as well as the nutrient and sediment runoff. And that's it. Any questions? Thank you. Yes. That is actually one of the, well, I think it's a myth of production is compaction. The first thing they always say, if you graze it, you'll cause compaction. Where we're looking at grazing is in the fall-winter time period. The cropping sequence is corn followed by winter wheat followed by soybeans. A lot of the corn can be grazed. If we put in wheat with a tillage radish earlier, we might be able to have enough biomass that we could graze longer, and it would reduce the need for supplement during that cool period. Really like to be able to graze over winter. Some of the things that we're looking at are, one of the challenges we have with cover crops is that we can't let them become a weed, so they have to winter kill. They can't kill cows, because then we can't graze. So when somebody was mentioning hairy vetch, I am not allowed to mention hairy vetch. Hairy vetch is a weed. In other words, it will not, and it kills cows. So we cannot touch hairy vetch as a potential cover crop. So some of the things we're looking at, and also we can't use rye, because rye will become a weed in wheat. So we can't touch rye. So there's a lot of cover crops that won't work in our area. I've tried purple top turnips, a lot of the different brassicas. Love purple top turnips, they make a great quiche. But cows won't eat them until it freezes, and they do not winter kill. So then you've got a crop the next year you've got to deal with. So trying to put this whole thing together, and then I'm going to go ahead and plug Jerry, is looking at changes, and he's my graduate student there, looking at changes in the biochemistry and the biological activity in these soils. Because, again, like the fellow before me said, I think that's the really critical point. We've been really good at measuring physical and chemical changes in the soil, and I think a lot of this is biological, and that's what we need. Am I done? Okay.
Thank you.